It's time. Time to get inspired and empowered. To realize it's never too late. To create your next amazing story. Get ready to break through, transform, and start living the life of your dreams. So, are you ready? Truly ready to begin your journey to create your next amazing story in life and love? Great. Let's jump in with your host, Life and Love Transformational Coach, Suzanne Oshima.
To the It's Never Too Late show. I'm Suzanne Oshima, and I help single women transform midlife into your best life and find love again in your next chapter. And today we have a very special guest. I'm super excited, Bex Burton, and she's a love and relationship coach. And today we're talking about emotional availability. Are you the emotionally unavailable partner? So welcome, Bex. I'm so excited to have you here.
Thank you so much, Suzanne. I'm really excited to be here. This is one of my favorite topics, and I'm just so excited to dive in.
I know. But before we dive in, can you share with the ladies how you became a love and relationship coach and who you serve?
Absolutely. Happily. Well, I became a love and relationship coach mostly born out of my own failures in love. I recognized that I had three relationships over the span of 10 years that ended pretty much the same way and with very different men, and recognized that I was the common denominator in all of those relationships. So that sparked a journey of self-reflection, self-discovery, study of love, relationship, partnership. And it continued even after I attracted my partner, who was sent to me by the divine with more signs and synchronicities from the universe than believable. And then within a year into that relationship, all those same patterns that I carried into the relationship came up again. So my move into love and relationship coaching was in service of not only my own process, but also to serve other women who have had a similar path.
Yeah, you know, thank you for sharing that, Bex, because I know probably earlier that it was probably not easy for you to share that you were the common denominator, right? Because none of us want to face our own stuff. And sometimes it can be really hard. And that's why I love this topic, is because you and I both coach women, and I'm sure you hear a lot of your clients or even people that are in maybe your free group or something like that, where they'll say, I keep attracting emotionally unavailable men. And it's always raises the hair on my neck, because I'm like, wait, is it really him that's emotionally unavailable, or is it her, right? And it's not to say that men are always emotionally available, because that's not true, but we can't control them. So she could be the common denominator. So what does it mean to first be emotionally available?
Yeah, that's a great question. Emotional availability is something that we hold for ourselves as well as for other people. And the way that I look at it is we look at the relationship with self first. And so being emotionally available for yourself means that you are able to look at your emotional experience non-judgmentally, reflect on it, witness it as it's arising, and pay attention to it, pay care and tending to it with empathy and compassion, with a loving nature, and being a safe place for your emotions. So whether they be complex emotions like anger or frustration, or, you know, the more joyful emotions like joy, levity, lightness, happiness, those kinds of things. And then not only for yourself, but also for others. So being able to hear somebody else's expression of emotion, being able to maybe even witness it before they are able to, and being that safe place for someone to express their emotions to you without having to go into some kind of reaction mode. And we can talk about those and how they show up in relationship in a second.
I'm smiling and laughing a little because what popped into my mind when you just said that, I was like, oh, and then when we get triggered, then, uh-huh. Right? And we can get triggered and we can pull away, which brings me to The next question is really, what are the signs of emotional unavailability, right?
So the signs of emotional unavailability then are going to be, they could be what you just described, pulling away. And this might look like, we react. We have this conversation, we have this eye roll energy that happens if our partner's sharing emotions with us, and we might think, are we having this conversation again? Or really? So that would be sort of the pulling away dynamic. But also, there's also the moving inward dynamic that is also reflective of emotional unavailability, which is if your partner's sharing, or even if we're noticing that we're having some kind of emotion, again, this can be internal or external, where if our partner or we're noticing complex emotions, then we try to move in, we try to fix it, we try to change it. There's this term silver lining, which women are very good at, especially if we're spiritual women who are on a manifestation path and we're afraid that, you know, low vibration is going to mess up our manifestation. So, oh, well, you can't feel that way, or look at the bright side. But what happens when we're instructing others to look at the bright side, we're denying them the opportunity to just be in their human experience of having this, what I like to call a 360-degree full range of emotions. And that's part of the human experience. And although our intent is really good when we're trying to show somebody the bright side or have them look at the positive, what's really happening is we're damaging that relationship. And this happens when we do this to ourselves as well. You know, we may have heard of the term toxic positivity, and this is an example of that. You know, if we're feeling angry or something and we say, oh, well, I shouldn't feel this way because, and a lot of times in this work, it's because it's gonna counter affect my manifestation. It's going to impact what I'm trying to call in. But that's actually not the truth. Like you're just cutting off a limb of your human experience when we deny that emotional expression.
So what I'm hearing you say then is to just, it's okay to feel those emotions like anger, sadness, and not deny them, and move through the process to the other side instead of like avoid, like going, like you said, the anger, avoiding it or pushing it down. Because when
Another great example, not to interrupt you, but that bottling it up and like holding it within, and then all of a sudden there's an explosion. I mean, that's another example of emotional unavailability.
Yeah. And so how can a woman get comfortable with feeling those emotions, even though it's uncomfortable?
Yeah, that's such a great question. The practice of this is, first of all, it is a practice. It's a process. You know, this is not a switch that we're once and done. We're emotionally available, which we know. But the process that I like to walk women through is the process of intelligence, literacy, and skill. So we start with intelligence, and intelligence is just waking up to the inner landscape, waking up to the fact that we are emotional beings. You know, because for a lot of women who are, you know, not as in touch with their emotional self, that might look like in her life, it might look like she's slower to process her emotions. You know, something happens at work or in her relationship and, you know, something is off, but she's not really able to pinpoint it until hours or days later. That's another example of being emotionally unavailable. And so to kind of combat that and build this intimacy with her own emotional experience, we start learning like when you're having an emotional experience to become mindful of those moments. And mindfulness practices can help a woman get in touch with her emotional landscape. Part of the intelligence process is also accepting what is. You know, feeling the emotion as it arising and then not like recognizing the urge or the impulse to push it away or to talk yourself out of it, but simply like being with it, resting with it, and not trying or efforting in any way. And this is a skill. I'm not going to tell you that it's an easy one, but it is a skill that can be practiced and developed. Once we move from intelligence and the awareness of the emotional experience, as well as like the making room for it, then we can move into what I like to call literacy, which is becoming fluent in emotional language. So that's naming your emotions. There's a phrase, you may have heard of it, if you can name it, you can tame it. And this is one, you know, just one step of, you know, beginning to untangle the complexity and the intensity of these emotions. Like, for example, if you are in anger or frustration, if you can pause and say, I'm feeling angry, I'm feeling frustrated, then just that one degree of distance from being in it, I like to call it the undertow of the emotional experience, it pulls you up onto the surface, onto your surfboard. Part of literacy is also, I just demonstrate it, being able to like name the emotions with I feel statements. And we're using emotive language. We're using the language of emotions. I'm feeling blank. I'm feeling happy. I'm feeling disconnected. I'm feeling lonely. These are all emotive words. And a lot of times, like, you know, I think I posted something on Facebook, like, how are you feeling today? Use emotive language. And I got a whole bunch of emojis. And it's like, oh no, there's a total disconnect here. Emotive language. You know, I feel statements. The other way that we can get this twisted is, you know, if a woman might say, I feel like you're doing this on purpose just to get back at me. And that's not an I feel statement either, even though we're using the words I feel. But emotive language, again, is coming back to the actual names of the emotions. And there's like tons of like emotional language resources online that are available. So we've got intelligence. We've got literacy, and then that third step is communication. And this is where it becomes vital in partnership, in relationship, especially if we've got somebody that we really like and we want to build intimacy and longevity with them. The skill of communicating these emotions is paramount, because chances are we're having an emotional response because of something in our partnership that is going well or that's not going well. And if something is going well, we want to communicate that. We want to reinforce how good it feels and how it makes us feel so that we can tell our partner that we, you know, in so many words, that we want more of what's working. Mm-hmm. And likewise, if something's not going well, we don't want to automatically assume that that's the end of the relationship, flip the table and walk out. That was my MO for a long time. But rather, is there a way that I can communicate this, that this thing isn't going well? And that conversation is always going to begin with, this is the way that I've been feeling. You know, I've been feeling lonely. I've been feeling disconnected. I've been feeling really confused. You know, and when we lead with those statements, first of all, it clues our partner in to our suffering or our discontent instead of putting them on alert if we're talking about them, like, hey, I've noticed that you, all of a sudden they're on alert. Mm-hmm. And the conversation may not go very well. But right. When we can communicate how we feel and then thusly what we need or what we desire, what we want more of from that person to make us feel the feelings that we want to feel, then we're starting to build connection. We're starting to build intimacy. We're creating the building blocks for longevity.
Right. So what I'm hearing you say is really focus on me, like I, instead of, like you said, pointing the finger, because that doesn't go well, right, when we point the finger. And absolutely. And then you're also owning your emotions too, right? Mm-hmm. But what if, because it was interesting when you were talking about the I feel statements, what popped into my mind was how sometimes we as women can sometimes say, she may not use the exact words, I feel fine, but she may say, I'm fine, right? And when that's her default and when she doesn't really feel that. So how can she like break that habit of just always saying, I'm fine, or I feel fine, or when she's not really, because she doesn't want to make other people feel uncomfortable, or the man she's dating or in relationship with to feel uncomfortable because she's not in a good place?
Sure, totally. Yeah. Well, there's a couple of things that come to mind. The first thing is practice, you know, and this can be done in the container of relationship or outside the container of relationship. And what I mean by practice is, again, go online or contact me or you and find these resources for emotive language, like emotions wheels and emotions charts. Print them out. Like, I literally carried around an emotions chart in my purse for maybe 2 years, practicing the skill of pulling them out, reading through them, and just checking in with myself at any given day, any time of day, any day of the week, and just asking myself, how do I feel in this moment? And then not settling for, I feel fine, not settling for, I'm okay, but actually going through these lists and seeing if there is something that I could, some word that is just even more descriptive that aligns with how I'm feeling in that moment. Even if the jump is from I'm fine to I'm feeling content. Like that's just a little bit richer, that's a little bit more descriptive, and that might be true. Mm-hmm. The second thing is to allow ourselves to feel more than one thing at once. And this is really complex because a lot of women will be confused that like, well, I'm feeling really angry, but I still love this person. So again, that doesn't necessarily mean that it's the end of the relationship, but it means that there's a both and, there's a yes and situation happening. So allowing ourselves to feel multiple feelings at once, and the more feelings that are on the table at once, the better. I know it kind of makes the salad a little more jumbly, but the truth is that then we can rest in the fact that we're complex human beings having an emotional experience, and not any one of these emotions is right or wrong. They just simply are. And then let's see, I think there was another thing. I think, you know, coming back to mindfulness and awareness of the default, you know, because so often we'll say I'm fine or I'm okay, just out of a knee-jerk reaction, you know, and just slowing time down and recognizing A, when somebody's asking you, how are you feeling? Or how are you? Discerning whether this is the appropriate time to actually go into a conversation or if it's just something in passing. Yeah, I'm good. Hi, you know, because there are times when I'm fine is, you know, called for. There are times though where I'm fine is not called for. It's actually a conversation that we're having. So recognizing the impulse as it's arising. And you know, again, that's not an easy thing to do straight out of the gate. It is a practice. It's a muscle that you build, but it's not impossible. And when you feel it arising, you can pause and you take a deep breath and check in with yourself and say, wow, my impulse is to say that I'm fine, but I'm really feeling ungrounded. I'm feeling uncertain. I'm feeling lost. I'm feeling, you know, again, going back to what is present in that moment.
So now it's interesting because when you were sharing that, I started getting this visual in my mind of a woman dating a man in the very early stages of dating. And let's just say she's not having a great day and she shows up on a date and he's like, how are you feeling? Or how are you doing? Whatever it is. And she's like, well, I want to tell him how I really feel, but now I'm afraid if I share how I really feel, right, sad, unhappy, or unsafe, mm-hmm. whatever it is, that it's going to push him away, like he'll run away. What would you say to her?
Yeah, that is a great question. and I will come back to sharing our emotional experience is foundational and building blocks for intimacy and longevity. And so I will also echo the ability to hold more than one emotion at once. So if we come back to your situation, we come back to your example, she shows up on the date, something is compelling her to say yes to that date, you know, because if she wasn't compelled to be on that date, she would have said no.
Right.
So there's a couple of things happening. She shows up, she might be feeling tired, she might be feeling drained from work, but at the same time, she's also curious about the man. She's also grateful for the invitation. She's also excited to have a conversation. She might be pleased to meet in person. There are so many things happening. And so for this woman in this situation, her coaching, the next step for her would be to test the waters and share both and. Thank you for asking me how I'm feeling. To be perfectly honest, I'm feeling a little tired and drained from work. But I'm also really excited to meet you, and I'm really thrilled to be having this conversation. You know, because when we say things like that, it gives the other person an insight into A, our own relationship with ourselves, the clarity that we have, and also it gives the other person an insight into our complexity, the richness that we can hold multiple emotions at once, that we have the courage to share the things that are not so attractive, if you will. And the truth is, when the receiver is a man who is also emotionally available, who has done his work, he will respect you more for it, or he will lean in and say, is there something that I can do for you? Is now not a good time? Would, you know, or, you know, a man who is driven to connect will lean into that and offer support or want to hear more. And to speak to your question of, you know, wouldn't we be afraid that that would scare him away? Well, the truth is, so be it. Godspeed. If that scares you away, hearing that I'm tired and a little drained from work, what kind of partnership are we going to grow together if we're going to integrate our lives, perhaps build a family? Like, I'm sorry, but being tired and being drained from work is not a unique situation. Like, it happens to all of us. And so if our partner can't hear that without running away out of fear, then we've dodged a bullet. And likewise, you know, and this is the same thing on the receiving end. And this is, you know, for women who might fear that they're the emotionally unavailable partner, how do we respond when men or women, when people around us share their vulnerable emotions with us? You know, do we want to eye roll and change the subject? Do we want to, you know, try to fix or silver line it? You know, are we acting in any other way than just being open and offering compassion? Wow, that's hard. Oh man, I feel you.
Yeah, and not trying to fix it, right?
Yeah, which is a hard one because it doesn't feel good in the moment.
Yeah.
But the truth is, our emotions don't define us. They don't define our relationships. You know, if we think of, you know, in mindfulness practice, they talk about like our landscape being an ocean and our emotions sort of being waves, you know, and we can witness the waves or we can get in them and be carried away by them.
Yeah, that's so true. That's so true. So what other ways can it show up in a relationship?
Yeah. let me just point out, because there's so many ways. one of them is we have the impulse to shut the conversation down. We already talked about silver lining or trying to fix something. We talked about that sort of eye roll energy, or like, we're having this conversation again, you know, this sort of closed offness to it. Or we have an impulse to just leave. Or we have the impulse to shut down, which is called stonewalling, and just not respond. The other ways that it can show up in a relationship, we might feel attacked. Like if our partner is sharing an emotion with us, this happens in my relationship. My husband, I think last week, shared with me that he's feeling lonely, he's feeling disconnected. And the truth is, yeah, I mean, I've been on a project and I've been in launch mode and I've been kind of monofocused, and that may have pulled some attention away from my relationship. Now, in the past, I would have heard that and I would have felt attacked. And my inner critic would have gone down the toilet saying that I'm a terrible wife, I can't do anything right, and all this other garbage. And those are signs of also being emotionally unavailable because we're taking it personally. We're personalizing the share. Instead of holding our own power, creating this fence between what's mine and what's yours, and we're kind of talking a little bit of codependent patterns here, codependent tendencies, and just recognizing, wow, my partner is sharing how they're feeling. This isn't a statement about me. It's not a statement about our relationship. This is just how they're feeling in this present moment. Now, if he's pulling our 10-year history of relationship into that conversation and relating it back to all the other times that he's felt lonely, well, that's his side of the fence. And that's a whole other conversation. But when we personalize it, that's another way that it shows up in relationship. We talked about fixing, solving, trying to make things better. Another way that it shows up in relationship is when we have the impulse to run, to call it quits. I like to call it flip the table, walk out, you know, and oftentimes that's a product of we're taking it personally, or we're trying to fix it or solve it, and we just can't get them out of it. you know, and then
I
those
think
are just,
it's also a product of when we want to run, right, is a fear also of getting your heart broken. So I'm going to jump out of this quickly so I don't get my heart broken and before you break it off with me or end this, so I'll just leave,
absolutely,
right? Instead of staying in the yuck and moving through it to the other side, right?
Yeah, totally. Yeah, I mean, there is that mindset of, well, it's better to leave first than to be walked out on, you know? But, and I say this so often, that there comes a point in our lives when, especially like if we have called in a really quality person that we really like, there comes a point when the pain of walking away from them is greater than the anticipated pain of just facing our shit head on, facing our intimacy blocks, like you said, just staying in the ick, allowing it to be icky, and maneuvering and like learning about it and untangling that, because chances are it's showing up in every relationship. You know, and just because you find your person or your soulmate doesn't mean that that pattern isn't going to show up again.
Yeah.
It just means that, great, maybe now you have the right container to untangle it with the support side by side with this person, instead of, you know, trying to show up with like mindfulness practices and emotional intelligence with somebody who's just not on that level yet.
Yeah, that's so important. And it's about being self-aware, right? If you're the runner, is noticing your pattern. Like you said, you had noticed a pattern for you and where it kept showing up in your past relationships, other things, right? So this has been amazing. Bex, do you have any last thoughts or words of wisdom for the ladies?
Oh my goodness, so many, but I will limit it to one. I believe that our romantic relationships are a reflection of the relationship that we have with ourselves. And so if we are struggling in romantic relationships, I encourage every listener to always, always, always come back to the relationship that she has with herself. Is she comfortable or uncomfortable being by herself? Is her top focus and priority always externally on men? Is she content and happy in the present moment, even as well as holding the longing for love? Or is there a mindset of, I will be happy when? You know, just some of these little things pertaining to our relationship with ourselves are always going to be paramount and always primary focus when it comes to calling in lasting love.
Oh, I love that. I love that. This has been amazing. So Bex, how can the ladies find you?
Absolutely. BexBurtonCoaching.com. It's B-E-X, like T-Rex, Burton Coaching, and there's a free training on that website that anybody can join in and listen to.
Awesome. So thanks everybody for joining us on the It's Never Too Late show. My show is available both in video and podcast format, which can be found at yournextamazingstory.com.
Love today's episode of the It's Never Too Late show? Then head on over to yournextamazingstory.com to continue the conversation. Get access to show notes and get more amazing content.